Welcome to Susitna Writer's Voice, area writers reading their work.
Greetings. Welcome to Stardate Susitna. I'm Kathleen Fleming. In this edition, I'll talk about the waning moon, planets visible in the evening and morning skies, the first of two eclipse seasons this year, and more. You look at the night sky. I know you do. Now learn a little bit about what you are seeing. Let's start with the moon. La Luna was full last Friday, and for observers in most of the Eastern Hemisphere, the Atlantic, and the U.S., there was a type of lunar eclipse called a penumbral eclipse. The whole thing was over by the time of moonrise in Alaska. But we didn't miss much. La Luna got close to Earth's dark umbral shadow, but really just passed through the bright penumbral outer shadow, causing a mild dimming of the full moon's majesty. But that did herald the start of the current eclipse season. Eclipses generally come in pairs, for orbital reasons I won't expand on here. February 2017 has a penumbral lunar eclipse, that was last Friday, and an annular solar eclipse, February 26th. Annular comes from the Latin annulus, meaning circular, ring-shaped. So an annular eclipse is not total. The moon will be 1 week past apogee, its furthest from the Earth, and therefore it will appear a bit smaller than the sun, and therefore not quite big enough to completely cover El Sol. The result, for observers within the narrow path, is a magnificent bright ring of sun around the dark disk of the moon. Quite spectacular, but not a total solar eclipse. The sky does get a weird steely gray color and the temperature drops a bit, but stars and planets do not appear and it never becomes safe to remove your eclipse shades. The path of the February 26th annular eclipse, it begins in the Pacific Ocean, traverses Chile and Argentina, crosses the Atlantic, then makes landfall in Africa, crossing Angola, Zambia, and ends in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The 2 weeks between a lunar and a solar eclipse is called an eclipse season, and here we are. The USA total solar eclipse I've been talking about in every Stardate Susitna this winter is on August 21st and is 2 weeks after a partial lunar eclipse, when the moon just barely dips into the Earth's umbral shadow. But again, that entire event happens during our daytime when the moon is below the horizon, favoring the Eastern Hemisphere. One more thing about the annular solar eclipse on February 26th, there are websites that will provide live streaming so you can watch it happen from the comfort of your easy chair or your bed a few hours around 6 a.m. Alaska time. Search the internet next week and find a couple of websites you can use. The time of annularity depends on where the webcam is located. If the feed is from Patagonia, it'll happen before 5 a.m. If the feed is from Angola, it'll be closer to 7:30 a.m. Alaska time. So you'll want to know the website and where the webcam is located before going to bed Saturday night, the 25th. Now let's turn to the objects and events that you can see with your own eyes from right here in the Upper Susitna Valley. After sunset, Venus comes blasting through the twilight. Visible even in broad daylight, Venus just keeps getting brighter and brighter. Well, let me explain. Venus is planet number 2 from the Sun. We are number 3, so the goddess of love has a smaller, faster orbit than we do. Right now, we are basically on the same side of the Sun, and Venus is trying to catch up to us. It's fairly gradual since both planets are moving in the same direction. So as Venus moves closer, the angular size of her disk, in other words, the apparent size of the whole sphere of the planet, gets bigger and bigger. Of course, anything that moves closer to the viewer appears larger. However, there's a trade-off between Venus getting closer and bigger, and therefore brighter, and the percentage of the illuminated side of Venus that is facing Earth. See, the closer she gets, the more of her dark backside is facing us. The Sun on the other side of Venus is lighting up the side that is not facing toward Earth. It's a pretty basic concept that might be hard to visualize just by hearing my words. I'll try to find an illustration to include with the posting of this program on the KTNA website. Anyway, that sweet spot where the trade-off between close and percentage of illumination facing Earth balances to produce the brightest possible Venus? Well, that happens this week, Thursday evening. After this week, as Venus slows her eastward migration considerably, while the Sun consistently trudges eastward relative to the background stars, the goddess will continue to grow larger while the crescent of her illumination grows thinner. By March, Venus, the evening star, will appear very close to the Sun, remaining above the western horizon only briefly after sunset. After March, she becomes the morning star, but then will soon be losing darkness. So gaze upon her beauty now while you still can. Binoculars may reveal her comely shape, though best to peer through the evening twilight before her brilliance becomes so overwhelming. The other planet now visible in the evening is Mars. The god of war is about 1/100th as bright as the goddess of love. Mars is a reddish color, about a fist width to the left or east of Venus. Mars is on the far side of his orbit, fourth planet from the Sun, bigger, slower orbit than ours, and it appears that the Sun will eventually catch up to Mars, but not until July. So we have the god of war to observe in the evenings until the perpetual light of summer takes over. Watch as Venus and Mars distance themselves from each other. In the AM sky, Jupiter is rising earlier, getting higher sooner, and growing in brightness. Planet number 5 is much, much further from the Sun than Mars, number 4, but he is huge, cloud-covered, and a good reflector of sunlight. Almost directly above Virgo's brightest star, Spica, Jupiter's current apparent motion is backwards, westward, retrograde, relative to the stars. So, for the rest of the months with darkness, watch Jupiter pull to the right or west of Spica. Very nice. By the way, the waning gibbous moon will be a couple of degrees above Jupiter Wednesday morning. They'll be closest about 6 a.m. Saturn is theoretically visible in the morning sky, but for us is so very low in the south-southeast, following the trajectory of the winter solstice sun, and now rising nearly the same time as the sun. I scanned the cloudless horizon before sunrise Sunday morning and could not spot planet number 6. Would be an easy morning target in the southern hemisphere, or even just closer to the equator. Oh well. I realize I haven't yet mentioned all of the moon's itinerary over the next 2 weeks. It's a waning gibbous now, passes just north of Jupiter Wednesday morning, as stated a moment ago. She shrinks to third quarter, with the left half of the near side illuminated, Saturday morning. The waning crescent then traverses the most southerly zodiac constellations and passes just 3 degrees above difficult Saturn's Monday and Tuesday mornings of next week. New moon and that annular solar eclipse I told you about already will be on Sunday, February 26th. Then the next lunation, or sequence of phases, begins. The evening sky after twilight fades is like a fancy jewelry shop. More stunning gems to be seen here than anywhere else in the entire sky. Starting with the brightest, like a brilliant faceted diamond, flashing different colors, making casual observers wonder what that might be. Well, that's Sirius, the dog star, because it's part of Canis Major. It's the brightest star visible from planet Earth. It's not far above the southern horizon, around 9 or 10, and that's the anchor, Sirius, of what some refer to as the winter hexagon. I think that's a stretch. It's more of an oval of first magnitude stars. Well, going clockwise up and to the left from Sirius, we come to Procyon, dominating the small constellation that is Orion's second hunting dog, Canis Minor. Above Procyon are two similar stars about half a fist width apart. These are Pollux and Castor, representing the heads of the Gemini twins. Continuing up clockwise, at the top of the hexagonal circlet, nearly overhead, is Capella, brightest star in Auriga. Then down and to the right is the red giant star Aldebaran, the angry red eye of Taurus the Bull. Below Taurus's horns is Orion, so keeping with the larger pattern, drop down from Aldebaran to Orion's lower right star, that's his knee, Rigel, a bright, hot, bluish star in about the 5 o'clock position of the circle. And then back down to where we started with Sirius. Sirius, Procyon, Pollux, Castor, Capella, Aldebaran, and Rigel. 7 of the 25 brightest stars in the entire sky right there in one view. Plus, near the middle of the circle, red giant Betelgeuse, Orion's upper left star, his shoulder, makes 8 first magnitude stars. So next time you're out on a clear night, get to know these sparkling gems, diamonds, rubies, sapphires. The jeweler can do no better, and these are free for the observing. Dare I suggest that if Valentine's Day brings out the romantic in you, feel free to utilize the gems in the night sky to illuminate your love. Perhaps the brilliance of Venus, now at her brightest, cannot compare to you, my own dear goddess of love. Well, you get the idea. Well, that's about it for this show. I'll be back with more in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, watch the dance of the planets, La Luna shrinking through the morning sky. The zodiacal light mentioned in many astronomy calendars is very difficult to notice from the far north, so don't stress about that. Have a great mid-February and keep looking up.
You've been listening to Susitna Writer's Voice, a production of Talkeetna Community Radio. You can hear these recordings anytime at ktna.org. New contributors are always welcome. You may call the station at 733-1700 for more information.